Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You've probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think plus minus kind of tell you a lot.
Curry steps back. Bang! 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 Exclamation point!
The plus minus statistic.
It's a stat that tells the truth.
Are you a believer in that statistic?
You tell me. I know it's good to be a plus.
It's Warriors plus minus.
Plus minus, plus minus.
Welcome to another episode of Warriors plus minus. We aren't as tired as the Warriors looked on this beautiful Sunday night, the first Sunday of the new year. But Slater, that was an absolute disaster from the Doug Christie Kings, throttling. Are you surprised that the Warriors got mollywopped at home?
Yeah, because it was a back-to-back, and, you know, not the type of back-to-back they should be wanting to schedule at home and probably should avoid in the future, where it's the 5:30 tip Saturday, the 5:30 tip Sunday. That's just like kind of like a draining situation. So, I mean, in some ways, you know, maybe you can understand like a little bit of a lower level of energy, but it's like, you know, Steph, who was great tonight, you know, didn't play in the first game, and De'Aaron Fox, you know, which you didn't even mention, right? No De'Aaron Fox. Who is usually part of the throttling if the Warriors are going to get throttled. So Malik Monk, like, I will say, like, it sounds really bad considering the Kings fired their coach last week and, you know, are 15 or whatever they are now, 16 and 19. But I will say, like, they played really well and they've been energized over the last week. And I thought Malik Monk looked like a star guard tonight with some of the stuff he was doing. And then Sabonis killed him. And I thought they were going to start Looney in the second half, because I thought, you know, we know Looney's a much better matchup for Sabonis than Trayce Jackson-Davis, who didn't play well. But we're kind of, that's a little bit deeper into the nitty gritty of why they lost. The truth is, like, a 30 point just thrashing, as you mentioned, on the same day they learned that Jonathan Kuminga's out for at least 3 weeks, at least 11 games. Like, this was a really bad Sunday for them. I would say, from a game perspective, their second worst game of the year, right behind that Memphis blowout.
To me, too, I think it was like, I mean, the Kings typically like expose the Warriors in this way. But since, you know, Doug Christie got on, they've been really kind of hammering down on a spread it out, ISO, drive kick, drive
push
kick.
Push pace.
It's been, yeah. I mean, they've been putting up 130 a night. So, But they just, I mean, they laid bare the problem with the Warriors. Like, they can't penetrate. They can't beat anybody off the dribble, not collectively, right? Obviously, Steph can do it. You know, Kuminga can do it. Wiggins can do it.
Schroeder had a good night doing it. I mean, yeah, that's what he was traded for.
But then
for,
the finishing, it's either they can do it and don't finish, or they can't do it. And it was really exposed. I mean, you got Sabonis back there, who's not a rim protector. It should have been, now I want to say open season, but they should have been confident. Even Steph said this afterwards, they should have been confident getting to the rim. They couldn't do it, and then they just have no chance of guarding, like, depth, like, good ISO players. And Malik Monk, you know, is one of the better one-on-one players in the league, right? Like, he's getting by his first man, and when that's Buddy Hield, it's going to be easy. And they just repeatedly broke down the Warriors defense. But to me, that's the big flaw. It's odd the way it's set up out of I mean, the entire league, if you watch the league, is getting this way, spread out, five guys who can shoot, you know, dribble and drive. And the Warriors seem to have a vast shortage of these guys. And the Kings got guys who can do it. They just do.
Yeah, you know, so they get down, 36-21 into the first quarter, double digits, like, right away. And they spent the entire game, like, trying to climb back. And there were moments, you know, I can remember, like, Buddy Hield having a couple open threes where it felt
Steph
like
– Steph hit the 2 4-point plays, cut it to
Steph
four.
Had a two, four. Yeah. And, you know, but I remember Buddy Hield having a couple moments where if he hit a three, you'd feel like, you know, like down to 15 or whatever it was. And like maybe they're crawling back in it. But, you know, Steph made an interesting side comment post game, which I don't think he was trying to, like, you know, be too subtle with it. But he said, basically, look, like you get down that big early because they came out flat and they just don't have a team. He said, quote, like the quote was built. He said they don't have a team that's built to come back. And that's a
loop. That's Steph saying we can't score. So if we get behind, we really can't score.
Yeah. Yeah. And just that's an interesting way for him to term it because, you know, what does built mean? I mean, that's the roster build. And, okay. You know, obviously we're heading into January, which is like when trade talks typically heat up a bit more, like the more serious deadline ones. Obviously, there's been a few trades, including the Warriors have made one, but, you know, do or die moment that comes in February, like a lot of those conversations and decisions are starting to be made over the next month. And I like, we don't need to get too deep into, you know, who they can, who they're interested in, blah, blah, blah. But I just thought, you know, that was a notable way for Steph to term their issues tonight. And it was an interesting point. Like, look, you know, they get down by 20. It's not like a lot of these other teams getting down by 20 in the league where bang, 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 you know, six threes in a 5 minute stretch and they're down by one. Like, they're not built that way, as he said.
I think part of it, too, was, like, to me, the odd part was, like, this was a game that Steph was playing well. I mean, he did – he had a couple of the turnovers that were pretty bad.
I believe he had five of the team's 22.
Draymond had five.
Okay.
But then two of them were bad. They were drives, getting in the air – like not wanting for some reason to attack Sabonis. Those were the ones, and trying to bail out at the last minute to throw it. Like, to me, those are the ones that are just the most, like, costly because it leads to the break. And also, like, Steph should just shoot the ball. But at one point, he's like 7 for 8. Like, he's rolling. He's hitting threes. And it just didn't matter. And they're still down 20. And that just... it doesn't happen with the Warriors. When Steph is rolling, usually that means it's a good night. The other team is scrambling. Other people can take advantage. But here he is feeling it, you know, got the ball in his hands, attacking, and it just didn't work. Like, it just produced nothing. Like, he got his, and nobody else could do anything about it. And then when he sat, it was even like it was over. To me, it just felt like he felt it. I remember, you know, Steph tonight, you know, he took forever to come out as normal, but he gets to his locker. Before he even gets to his locker, he just decides to do media. Normally, you know, Steph, he's getting dressed. He's chatting a little bit, and then he goes up and talks. But this time, he just like, let's just do it now. He's still got his uniform on. And you can just see how he walked up the steps. It just felt like... Now, I don't want to say hopeless, but you could tell he felt the weight. Like, how do you go 7 for 8 and it doesn't matter? It literally doesn't matter.
I saw him maybe 10 minutes before he talked, and he was still in the weight room, which, you know, it's like a back-to-back, so they get weight work in, and then they take tomorrow completely off. So, like, the whole team, as pretty usual, was in the weight room working. But I think his workout seemed like his workout was done. He was on – it looked like one of those – like, I don't know, leg press machines. And he was just kind of laying down. And it looked like he had like a smoothie packet type thing that, you know, I'm sure some nutrition thing, but he was just, until he was kind of deep in thought, like probably this is an hour after the game, he's still in uniform. And he's not actually doing the leg press machine. He's just kind of laying on the machine thinking. And my thought, I mean, as you mentioned, he typically waits to talk until he's dressed. So I was like, man, we got another like 45 minutes till he's going to talk. But I mean, after whatever, sitting in deep contemplation, he just walks up the stairs and talks. And you know, thinking I don't
about
think
life. What's he?
Yeah.
Who is he? Like, why? Where are they here?
Yes. Yeah, so what is life? But you know, and again, I don't think it was some like super revealing press conference. He's had more interesting ones this year and said more probably cutting notable stuff, but. You know, I don't know. They're 18 and 17. He can't sit up there, you know, talk about we're average again, like he said the other day. Like, I don't know. You know, they're searching for answers, but I honestly don't even think they're out there. And you know, they can try to maybe tweak on the trade market. And sure, maybe they end up taking the big swing on the trade market if one materializes, if you know, the powers that be within the organization decide they just need to shake it up, like, you know, pretty significantly. Okay, fine. And that might happen. But in my more, you know, two steps back opinion, looking at the landscape, looking at the chessboard, I just don't think there are real answers out there. And I think this is just heading towards, you know, kind of what it has been the last couple of years. And I just don't really know. It almost seems like maybe they're coming to grips with that too. Like, you know, trade landscape or not. Like, I just don't think they think there's something that's going to materialize that changes what's happening.
Well, to me, number one, I feel like that's where you got to go and make something happen. But also by the same vein, like, it's really hard to say because you and I were talking about this a little bit. Like, we really just don't know. And the question I have is, can they actually afford to wait? I mean, we're looking at teams that are falling apart. And in a month's time, right, the trade deadline is in a month. You got to wonder, like, who just waves the white flag and who sells the farm? And like you said, it's tough to go and say, go get that guy. He's the guy to get you over the hump. That's a tough call. But then you just don't know, like, how this thing is actually going to work out. So I'm curious, do you do let's just say you can do Vucevic now, which anybody who's thinking that is just not being rational, because going to them now only tells the Bulls, like, you're desperate. And these players have been on the Bulls for years for a reason. Zach LaVine asked for a trade reportedly, like, years ago, and they're still there. Because the Bulls aren't actually trying to get better. They aren't, like, actively working this thing. They're just kind of content with making the play.
Just look at what happened this summer. They first of all, they didn't trade DeRozan. They let him go to free agency. And then once he got to free agency, he finally got a contract with the team who you saw tonight, the Kings, that were willing to pay him an amount that meant a sign-and-trade was needed. Which, you know, if the Bulls front office had foresight, they would have got the pick swap and taken on Harrison Barnes as part of their rebuild, but they didn't want to take on that contract. So they basically got nothing. They got Chris Duarte in like a second and let the Spurs take on Harrison Barnes' contract and let the Spurs get a 2031 pick swap. So, I mean, like, I feel like we're far, you know, maybe we're too far down a rabbit hole of explaining, like, kind of like the oddities of the Bulls front office. But to your point, at this time of the calendar, it's not as easy to trade with the Bulls as it was to trade with the Brooklyn Nets, because the Brooklyn Nets are firm, they're like, this is the time to hit the eject button. Take Dennis Schroeder because it's going to help us lose games. Sure. We'll take 3 second round picks. Take Dorian Finney-Smith. We'll take D'Angelo Russell's contract in some seconds because, you know, they have a path. They're committed to a deep rebuild, whereas, you know, the Bulls are not. You know, Nikola Vucevic could maybe help them go on a 3-game win streak that would get them, you know, like to the upper side of the play.
The 8th seed. But yeah. So the question I have is, is it like whoever is available, whether it's if it's Vucevic, if you can sweeten the offer and make the Bulls do it now?
Yeah,
or if it's
it'd be Dan an overpay Johnson, right now. But
yeah,
you know,
it'd be an overpay right now. Is it worth it to just go do that?
Do the overpay?
Do the overpay now or wait while you're watching teams like the Kings who've like rallied of late, but, you know, they fired their coach. They've got the star player who's like, you know, if you listen to the rumor mill, might not want to be there. You got Phoenix is imploding. Minnesota is imploding.
Yeah. But yeah. No, you're right.
Can they afford to wait and just try to scrape out enough wins to still be in play in a month?
Well, so let me. The Kings are a much more extreme version of this, but the Kings are kind of actively searching the market. They're very much in on the Cam Johnson, talks right now. And the question, the deeper existential question with the Kings would be, is it smart to give up a future first or multiple right now to, improve around the edges, get Cam Johnson, who'll be your fifth starter, and really try to go all in on this mediocre team that they have, like make it a little bit better. Is that smart to give up 2027 first, 2029 first for the Kings? Like they might end up doing that, but that might look really bad if Fox, basically asks out this summer, they're in a full rebuild and you enter a rebuild having just given up picks for a role player, essentially first rounders. Now the Warriors are not in the same situation. Obviously, you have Steph Curry, you have much more of a track record of winning. Obviously, I'd say it's more, there's no fear at this moment of Steph Curry, like asking out the summer. So it's not apples to apples, but I'm just saying, I think part of what you were saying, like, do you go right now and like bowl over the Nets in a Cam Johnson deal, like put first rounders on the table or Vucevic, whatever. You could. And then a month from now, you could still be 500, still be a deeply flawed team, still not be going anywhere.
And also, potentially out of the mix, right? If something potentially else
happens. Yes, potentially out of the mix if something else comes available, and not have future first when you might be pretty bad. And whatever, look, I understand that there's reasonable arguments on both sides of zooming all in and don't worry about the future and all that. But like, that world exists where you go get Nikola Vucevic and you're still super average, and now you're just out assets and out leverage and just not that good. Because I don't know. Again, maybe there is a move out there that improves them more than I'm seeing currently on the chessboard. But and again, I think Vucevic would make sense, especially if the price tag's pretty low. But that's a deal that's probably a little bit more late January, early February, if it even materializes. The Butler one is the one that's being discussed more right now, because that is a type of situation where, Miami's ears apparently now are finally open to a Butler move. And it's not like they're using him to win games right now, because they just sent him home for seven games. So we can discuss, I don't know how deep you want to get with a discussion of should they enter the Butler mix or not, but that's one if you wanted to take a big swing. But then you wonder what, could you get Butler from Miami with just Wiggins and filler? Like, is Miami that out, like done and like willing to take a deal like that? Not even, you don't even have to throw Kuminga in it. I don't, and is that even worth it? Consider, there's just a lot going on here.
If you got to give up Kuminga, I'm just off of Jimmy Butler. I'm probably off anyway, but if you got to give up Kuminga, it's a non-starter to me. But the reason I like the Vucevic deal is because you may still be able to hold on to your assets, or at least enough of them to stay alive. And I do think one of the things that kind of got lost in the season by that 12-3 mirage of a start is that this thing was always designed to be like a 2 to 3 year project. And the question is, how much better can you get this year? Like, you do need to make the playoffs, right? Like, that's the thing. Like, what gets you into the playoffs? And then you build on that after that and see how you can do. So I know people want the thing that gets you a championship. It just doesn't exist. That wasn't the plan. And when they started 12-3, it felt like that somehow became the desire. But really, they just need to be a top six. Like, even a top six team would be an improvement. If you're six and you're out of playoffs, that's a step forward, and that's really what they need to do. But I like the idea of somebody like a Vucevic who can if you can get them now without giving them too much, you still keep your pieces in case something happens
later
in the summer.
Let me ask you, and this is me completely spitballing. I do not know the specific Vucevic market at this moment, but I guess considering, you know, what you're asking, I would you give up a first now for Vucevic if that's what it took, and instead of believing that, hey, if you just wait a few weeks and it gets closer to the deadline and, like, you know, teams have to be more realistic that it's probably just like second round draft capital. Like, do you think the urgency of this moment, this 3 week period, this time means that you should fast forward it enough to where you're going to give up a first instead of waiting and giving up a second? And again, I'm not saying that's this definite like marketing situation on the table, but I'm asking you, like, is that the type of urgency you're talking about that you are willing to overpay it to that type of degree?
I wouldn't be mad at it. I don't know if I'd do it. The first round picks, so remember, they didn't have a pick in 2024, right? So yeah. It's like you've just entered that life. Like, from the sense that if you still keep Kuminga, you still keep Pods, you know, maybe even if you still keep Moody, and if, like, if you throw in, if it's Kyle Anderson and whatever one other player.
Gary Payton has nine.
Yeah, Gary Payton, yeah. Something like that. And you're like, all right, and then the Bulls need a first round pick in order to make the deal happen. I don't know. I might just do it just to stay alive. Right? I might just do it just because, you know, you gotta be confident in your ability to maneuver with whatever you have. Like, somehow last year they didn't have first round picks, and they, you know, they made something work. You know, you got Kyle Anderson, you got De'Anthony Melton, you know, you got Buddy Hield, and you just gotta be confident in your ability to say, all right, we don't have this pick. Now what do we do? So I wouldn't be mad. I don't know if I'd do it for Vucevic. I just don't think he's that good. But they're in such a desperation mode that they just need a player of that caliber. Like, he's good enough. What he does would really help the Warriors. So if they did it, I wouldn't be mad. I probably, yeah, you know what? I might pull the trigger on it. I just might do it. That's a lot for Vucevic, though. But
yeah. I mean, you would be buying him at his highest value in the last few years. If you had tried to get him in the summer, like, it was like nothing, right? You know, yeah, I mean, we're talking about, he had 2 years at what felt like an overpay, you know, in the 2021 range. And I think he shot like 29% from three or something like that. Right now he's averaging 20 a game, shooting like 43% or something like that from three. He's been excellent offensively. Obviously he's got massive defensive issues. The theory, and, you know, it's a theory that I do know that there are people within the Warriors that are interested in, is get a stretch five, pair him with Draymond, who protects him defensively. Now
that changes so much with their offense. And then you just got to trust. Like, yeah. I feel pretty good about the idea of saying, Draymond, make this dude serviceable.
Yeah.
It just opens up so much. It opens
for Steph and for Kuminga.
Kuminga,
you could theoretically play Kuminga. That's, Steve has said this on the record. Like, you know, you could, you know, when it's like, oh, well, he keeps saying Kuminga's not a three, right? He's also always qualified that with, like, unless you have a stretch five, if you have a center that's, you know, out there hit threes, then suddenly, you know, he can play the three in a theoretical lineup. So
I think you just talked me into it.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's an interesting name, which, by the way, he's not the only stretch five theoretically on the market. I mean, Miles Turner is in an interesting situation.
I'd take Miles Turner in a heartbeat, though.
Yeah, you know, that price is probably going to be a bit more.
But he's gonna protect the rim.
Yeah, like, Kelly Olynyk is the guy last year they looked at. I mean, that's been out there. So
I feel like Kelly Olynyk is always out there.
Yeah, you know, and he signed an extension. It's not too pricey a one. With Toronto, Brook Lopez. I mean, I don't necessarily think he's going to be available, considering, what Milwaukee's still trying to do, and they look like they can still compete this year. But it's, I mean, that's kind of as the Warriors flip to 18-17, as the deadline gets closer, these are the type of conversations that are being had, starting to be had more across the league, where, you know, most of these front offices kind of start to, you know, meet more consistently and have these conversations more as the new year gets here. The cut date of guaranteed contracts is this week, and we'll see. You know, maybe it'll come into focus. But again, like you smartly pointed out early on, like, you know, it depends on the team you're dealing with. Brooklyn was a very easy trade partner that was ready, like second one of eligibility to trade Dennis Schroeder. Whereas, you know, Chicago's always like, you know, decent win tonight. Maybe we can compete in the East.
Yeah, you're going to see teams getting here pretty soon, ready to dump, you know. I do feel like, I don't know, you might not have to wait all the way till February, but at some point, you're going to get the yard sale in Portland and New Orleans, right? Like Utah, you know, I know won't be marketing until...
The Pelicans are 6-29. That's great. It's
insane. And CJ McCollum just dropped 50.
He did.
So the thing that intrigues me is teams like Indiana, like Minnesota, you know, like Phoenix, who just are not, like, they're going to have to do something. And it may not be necessarily, you know, get rid of somebody, but it may be to add. But in order to do that, you got to move something. So there's just a lot of interesting teams out there that do, like the Warriors, don't have answers and need to do something. And, you know, like, it just feels like something's in play. Atlanta, right? Atlanta's 18-18. You know,
that's pretty good in the East, by the way.
It is. I mean, it's play-in, but they're right. I mean, they're a game behind. I think they're a game behind Milwaukee, I think, for the 5 seed, you know. But Orlando, right? A team that's like 5 seed, got a lot of like duplicate parts, are going to get 2 players back, 2 like starter, you know, star players back at some point. You know, like, do they need, like, to me, if you could just stay alive from February, you just don't know. The one thing I think would be a mistake for the Steph Curry era is if you could get one of those guys that somehow could change you, and you can't because you burned it on something else. And I know that's kind of pipe dreamy that somebody's going to be available, but that's really all you have for this era is like hoping and just hope that somebody's going to become available who you didn't think. And you put them next to Steph, and now you're back a contender again. Like, that's what it's going to take. So you kind of have to stay alive for those, but yeah, I think you talked me into being willing to give up a first for Vucevic if it can happen right now.
And again, that's not us saying that that's on the table at this moment, but yeah,
it's Bulls, man. Nothing's on the table.
Everything and nothing is on the table all at once. So this is an important week, 10-day period for the Warriors coming up here because, you know, you lose Kuminga for at least 10 more games after this. And he was like, you know, he talked in the locker room pregame. He was really gingerly crutching on that right foot. He said he can't even, like, get up his stairs right now. So he's going to miss a while, you know, 3 weeks at a minimum, which is problematic for them for various reasons. I mean, he's been their third, fourth best player lately. Obviously, less time to evaluate him, you know, entering the deadline and all that. But also, like, this is a part of the schedule they need to win a good amount of games. They're about to play a Miami team that's in a free fall on Tuesday. On the second night of a back-to-back. Then their road trip is at Pistons, at Pacers, at
Raptors. I know Pistons cooking right now, just for the record.
Yeah, but, you know, like,
you still got to be able to beat them if you should all series.
Be able to beat them. Or at least, you know, like, I if we're looking at, I believe, the next 6 games. So Miami at home, at Pistons, at Pacers, at Raptors, at Timberwolves, back home against the Wizards. You know, if you're a good team, like 4-2 at minimum, like, that's a potential 5-1 stretch. I know road games are tougher, but, you know, as you look at, you know, where they can make up enough ground to try to be in that 45-48 win mark and maybe even get, you know, firmer in playoff positioning. Like, this is the type of 6-game subsection of your schedule that you need to, you know, gain ground on. So I just think it's big. It's a big 10 days.
Yeah. Steph said something tonight, when I was asking him about how he was feeling good, making shots. They just really need a really big stretch from Steph. And, you know, obviously it didn't matter at all tonight, but generally it does. And the days it doesn't matter, then it's a wrap anyway. But he was like, remember he was saying, I'm just glad it ain't December no more.
Yeah, did that, was that him just like,
I think it almost seemed saying, like I was pointing well at people. December.
Well, he played horribly in December. Yeah. Well, I shouldn't say. I mean, he had a couple of big nights, but like generally his shooting percentages were down in December, and he's been hot to start January. So was that him talking to himself, or was he like, was he kind of, it almost seemed like he was taking a shot at like the world that or something. I don't know. Just the way he did it.
I thought he was just saying like, I'm glad I'm over that month.
Well, okay. Yeah.
Like, I'm glad I'm out of that month that wasn't very good. And they lost a lot of games and, you know.
Yeah.
And now, look, he's been playing well in 2025.
Yeah. We talked about it plenty to start the season. Like, they won a handful of tough games, particularly road games, because he was great down the stretch. They were close, which they're close in most games. I know they got blown out tonight, but typically they play a lot of clutch, close games. And when they were winning early in the season, that's because they were in Oklahoma City and he hit big shots. They were in Boston and he hit big shots. They were home against, you know, Clay on the Clay return night. He had big shots down the stretch and he had big nights. So yeah, you're right. Like if he shoots 48% on a high volume of threes in January, like at the end of January, they're probably going to have a well over 500 month. If he's much more pedestrian, they're going to be 500 or below.
Yeah, so I think they need a big stretch from Steph. That's probably the only way this thing kind of sustains right now, especially without some kind of help. The difficulty is without the help, it's going to be tougher to do, because think about it now. I mean, you're basically saying Wiggins, you got to have a big night next to him. Like, it's got to be Steph and Wiggins and then hope for somebody else to have.
That's where Schroeder matters.
Yeah.
This is where Buddy
Hopefully
Hill's
Buddy,
like,
yeah.
His long slump right now is really hurting them. You know, I think Moody's looked good as like kind of a little, you know, bench scorer in the last few games. Like, more of Moses Moody would probably help the offense.
Yeah, they got to figure it out, but we'll see if they actually do it. Big one against Miami on Tuesday night. Massive, massive game.
Yeah. But all right, well, that's
all.
We'll
do another one. We'll do another episode before the road trip, perhaps, or maybe after the first couple of games. But yeah, we'll keep plugging along. Words plus minus, got what you need. Make sure you like and subscribe. Give us a 5-star rating while you're at it. Just go ahead and hook us all up. You know, we're going to deliver. So make sure you take care of us. So we got you. For my guy, Anthony Slater, and Tim Kawakami, wherever he is, writing about the 49ers probably. We'll see you next time on Warriors Plus Minus.